Hi, it's Quinn, and you're listening to Not So Bloody Mary, the show about women in history with negative reputations. Enjoy the show!
Hi, Grace.
Hey, Quinn.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Great. Oh, my God. My arms are still so sore from yesterday.
What did you do yesterday again?
Moved my grandma's whole condo twice.
Right.
Yeah, because we had to go over and move it all out, and then we had to go move it all back in. And then after lunch, our family went back over and put everything into shelves and things.
And then you got a cuckoo clock.
Yeah, that's currently sitting right next to me because I don't know where to put it. yeah, because, okay, here's the problem, though. My grandma's, like, ridiculously short. She's, like, 4'10", like, probably smaller than that. Like, I feel like she's shrunk. She just seems smaller. And so she can't reach, like, the top shelf or the back half of the second shelf. So we're like, you have too many things to not put things on these shelves. What are we supposed to do with them? She's like, it's fine. I'll just use my stepladder. I was like, I don't want you to have to drag a stepladder out every single time you need something. Oh, my God. And half the stuff she didn't, like, she hasn't reduced it since my grandpa died, which was, like, 3 years ago. But... like, she had two bathroom stuff for everything. There was, like, two soaps, two this, two that. We're like,
that's sad.
You don't need that, honey. Like, I think she just, like, put it all in and didn't really think about it. But, so, yeah, my mom and I are trying to organize the bathroom, and there's, like, all this stuff. But it's okay. Her new place, because she's moving to the retirement residence place, so it's not, like, a retirement home, but she gets, like, meals so she doesn't have to cook for herself, which is good because I don't think she eats full meals a lot because she's like by herself, so she's like, I'm just tired.
Yeah,
but yeah, and all of the seniors were coming over and saying, are you Bonnie, are you moving in? And she was like, yes. So hopefully she makes friends. Just praying for that. I don't know, she can be interesting. Love you, grandma. This cuckoo clock is just right in front of me. There's like a piece that fell off and we don't know where it goes. But it's okay. It's not even on, so like we don't have to worry about it making noises. That would be not good if it just started cuckooing while we were talking. Can you imagine? I don't even know. I don't think you can like make it stop once it's already going. So yeah. So hi everybody. I don't even know what to say. This is Catherine Howard part 3. As you do.
As well.
Honestly, I just can't stop thinking about... I'm so tired. We watched the Friends reunion last night, right? It didn't work on Crave because Crave wouldn't let us log in.
Why?
Because it's stupid. So then I accidentally clicked subscribe and signed my family up for Crave. Which we don't want. And so then my dad had to go on the phone and cancel it. But we did eventually watch it in a totally legal way.
We loved.
We decided that they all have enough money.
They do.
Yeah. So that's what I did last night. Now let's talk about what Catherine Howard did.
What Catherine Howard did last night, 5 years ago.
She got married in like July. So. It's almost exactly where we are right now. You know, happy wedding anniversary. When did they get married? It was like July 4th or something.
Cute.
I love when I search up when did. All of them are like, when did slavery end in the U.S.? When did Utah become a state? When did Oregon become a state? Simply because of American history.
Love that for you.
Like, oh my God. I don't really care. Okay, they got married on July 28th, 1540. So we're like a month away.
Yeah.
This is what Catherine Howard was doing a month in the future and like 500-ish years back. So,
woo.
Happy time, happy wedding, besties. Yay. Yeah, so Catherine and Henry are getting married. They're getting hitched. It's Henry's fifth wife. Oh, my Lord. He is 49 years old. She is probably like 17. That's like the average age.
Poor girl.
Honestly. That we can think of for her. So just like at her baptism, the church is like, okay, we do require you both to say that you consent. So they both were like, yeah, we consent. I mean, like, to be fair, you could lie and not, like, really mean it. But, yeah, she's, like, 17. She probably doesn't really know what she actually wants. Sorry to any 17-year-olds, but y'all are only, like, a year older than me. So, like, I can say these things. So, once she married Henry, she's now officially his property. Yay! So, a king rules over his subjects, but they're not, like, his possessions. They're just, like, under his watch. But in contrast, a wife doesn't have any separate legal identity to her husband, and she can't even leave her own will until she becomes a widow. So if she dies before her husband, everything just goes to her husband. She can't be like, I would like this fancy palace to go to my child. Marital rape is regarded as an oxymoron. They're like, well, you're married, so there's no such thing as rape if you're already married.
Oh my god.
Yeah. To be fair, I mean, 1540, but also no. But in 1540 they did have like rules about rape. It's just not in marriage. So, I mean, no. Domestic abuse is only frowned upon if it reaches the stage where the wife's health or life are endangered. So if you're just like casually hitting, they don't really care. We don't think Henry ever hit her. I'm just going to say that right now. We don't think he ever like abused her physically. Good job, I guess. We don't think Henry really physically abused any of his wives. I mean, he did like kill them, but he didn't actually like swing the axe. If her wedding night at Oatlands, so they got married at Oatlands Palace, which is not one of Henry's like biggest palaces. It's kind of like a country place, you know, cottage core. If this was the first time she slept with Henry, it probably wasn't a very nice evening. Sorry, Catherine. Even disregarding the necessary inconvenience of pretending that she had lost her virginity because Henry would be watching. Since his third marriage, his physical appetite had grown, his sporting capacities had faded, and his waist had rapidly expanded. An ulcer on his leg regularly oozed pus. Instead of heal, it periodically closed over and then just, like, reopened. So, that's fun.
Ew.
I literally, like, ew, that's disgusting. But, yeah. So, Henry's not in the best health of his life. He's actually in, like, some of the worst health of his life. Basically, Catherine of Aragon and Anne Boleyn got, like, best health Henry. Like, when he, like, jousted all the time, was, like, really fit and was, like, hot, apparently. And then Jane Seymour got, like, kind of in the middle, and then from, it was just a downward spiral since then. Yeah. So, yeah. Henry's private life was so, like, improbable that it has provoked many theories as to, like, why he only had three kids, I mean, four if you count Henry Fitzroy, that survived, and only two of them lived past, like, 20. So one that has gained widespread credence in academic accounts of Henry's life over the last 50 years is the idea that he was more or less impotent after he entered middle age. So that would be like Jane Seymour onwards. But yeah, this is a more realistic theory than the one that says that he had syphilis, because it's been like examined and medical people are like, no, he probably didn't have syphilis. So good job, Henry. No syphilis. The more like thoughtful people that talk about the impotence theory argue that the psychological pressures on him to sire an heir led to physical problems that were masked by a larger than life personality. Because he's putting all this pressure on his wives to sire an heir, but it's also in his head. He doesn't want to leave his dynasty. It's only two people old. He is only the second person in the dynasty to actually rule. So it's very new.
Very new.
So he doesn't want it to die. There were moments when his mask kind of seemed to slip. When the Habsburgs ambassador made a comment about small families, the king got like really pissed and was like, am I not a man? Am I not? Am I not? Because he thought that the ambassador was saying that he wasn't a man because he only had three kids. So I guess my dad's not a man because he only has two. Another piece of evidence central to a discussion of Henry's bedroom problems is Anne Boleyn's alleged complaint to her sister-in-law, Jane Boleyn, that sex with the king was not enjoyable, but at least it didn't last very long. Sweetheart, why did you say that? Can you imagine? He heard about that and he was immediately like, Cromwell, start the procedures. Henry definitely emerged from his fifth bridal chamber in better spirits than those in which he had emerged from his fourth. He's very happy. Marital bliss was the mood as he and Catherine set off on a 10-day hunting trip throughout the new court chase. Catherine married a man who, although he was much older than her and was putting on some weight, was still an impressive figure. He can give her everything that she had ever wanted. Because she's 17. She thinks of material items. Catherine's honeymoon played out in kind of, it wasn't the best. There was a fiction of plague, so they made up this excuse. When they moved Anne of Cleves to Richmond, they're like, oh no, there's plague in the city. We just don't want you to die. And that became a reality. In the summer of 1540, one MP wrote that there was suffering universally throughout the realm and great death.
Oh.
So that's a great way to bring in your queenship. Henry did absolutely nothing about this, and it was left to urban authorities to organize things, you know, to help fix this. The king's indifference to his subjects' needs was a long-running theme in his reign. Good job, Henry. He had, after all, pitched them headlong into a generation of political instability, because the entire time they're like, I don't even know what religion I'm supposed to be following if I don't want to get burned. And unlike his great father, two daughters, he never pushed forward any legislation which could improve his subjects' lot in life. So that was a direct quote from a book I was reading, so I don't know if we're supposed to see here that Edward didn't do anything that helped improve his subjects either. But, I mean, to be fair, died at 15. Wasn't really thinking about the subjects when he was 13 years old, because 13-year-old boys suck. No offense to my brother. Like anybody around Henry, Catherine only really expressed what she thought of her husband in terms of the, like, she was like, oh, I love him so much. And she was always obedient. But there are comments from those who knew Henry's courtiers but weren't courtiers themselves. So, like, they didn't have to worry as much about getting their heads chopped off. That this was play acting. So she's lying. Even some comments made by Catherine in future conversations with Thomas Culpepper suggest that she was, like, really scared of Henry. I would be, too.
Yeah.
He killed her cousin. He killed two of her cousins, actually. It's just kind of terrible. She made her first public appearance as queen consort at Hampton Court Palace. So that's, I guess, that's like a great palace. I don't know. That's like one of the only ones that's still open to tourists because it hasn't been dilapidated or, you know, ruined. So I guess it was built. Well, most of Henry's palaces weren't built well. He kind of just, like, built them really fast, and then they all just kind of died. The news of the royal wedding was announced there at the exact same time. So I guess they're just like, hey, she's queen. Kind of what, like, he did with Anne. Hey, she's queen. We're married, and she's pregnant. Bam, bam, bam. A week later, on the Feast of the Assumption, she was included in the prayers for the royal family for the first time. Yeah. So here's a quote from Young and Damned and Fair by Gareth Russell. In the descent into the chaos described by the Prince of Salerno, the office had already seen one queen banished into internal exile after 23 years of marriage, a second publicly butchered on charges that would have raised eyebrows at the court of Agrippina, a third who lay dying while her husband debated whether to cancel his hunting trip to Esher, and a fourth who had been metaphorically stripped bare before the public as every fold, sag, and blemish was discussed in excruciating detail to justify why she was too grotesque to please her husband. End quote. So she's really entering a great position to be in. Just sounds like so much fun. Oh, God. If only Henry just hadn't happened. To be fair, though, where would England be without him? Many things happened because of him. Some bad. Some actually pretty good. Compared to Catherine's immediate predecessors, she didn't really have a lot of experience of life at court before she became, you know, like, the most powerful woman there. Catherine of Aragon was Princess of Wales, and then she was the Dowager Princess of Wales for almost 8 years by the time she became queen in 1509. Anne Boleyn lived at Margaret of Austria's court, then she lived in the household of the Queen of France, then she lived in the Queen of England's household from 1521 to 1527, and she had her own household as basically First Lady throughout the 6 years of Henry's annulment, and Jane Seymour had served in the households of both Queen Catherine and Queen Anne. Catherine, in contrast, was she only lived at court for no more than 8 months by the time she became queen. So she doesn't have a lot of experience at a court. yeah, she's lived in basically like a high school, like a boarding school, since she was younger, smaller. Like she's not ready. But now she gets to have lots of etiquette. It's even more etiquette for her. I don't know if that's good or not. She really seemed to like etiquette, but I think it also freaked her out because she's always anxious about it. So when she sat in public or in her apartments, her chair was always canopied by a cloth of estate. Everyone around her always had to stand really still until she spoke, like they were allowed to move. Before she entered a public space, her servants would clear a route for her. Like she just didn't really have to do anything on her own. Nearly all of the women in Catherine's privy chamber, however, were significantly older than her, so that doesn't really sound that great. Her half-sister Isabella Baynton was a mother and a stepmother. Two of the ladies, Lady Rochford and Lady Edgecombe, were widows. Jane Boleyn was in her mid-30s and Catherine was in her 40s. Their colleague Eleanor was about the same age as Jane Boleyn. So she's like 17 and she's with all these like 30-year-olds. They're supposed to be her friends. And she's kind of, you know, she acts very much like a teenager because she is one, but it's also 1540.
Right.
Yeah. Catherine generally preferred company to being alone. So she was an extrovert. If she took a BuzzFeed quiz, that's what it would tell her. And the nine, like, important ladies would always provide her rooms with a constant hum of activity. Yeah, so... Unfortunately, cliques are unavoidable in any large establishment, and Catherine's household was not an exception. There was one group that orbited the Duchess of Suffolk, whose religious sympathies were starting to increasingly lie with Protestantism, which is really funny because in the Tudors, they portray her as like a very devout Catholic. What they're trying to tell you. That Catholic, like after around here, she was like, no. She literally like tried to help save Anne Askew, who was burnt for being Protestant. So, justice for Catherine Brandon in the Tudors. So the Duchess of Suffolk's group was basically just like a bunch of palace intellectuals. They're just like the smart people. They would debate religion. They financed scholars at Oxford or Cambridge. They translated books on theology, and some of them even wrote their own. So that sounds kind of fun, but you know, that doesn't really sound like Catherine's jam.
No.
So there isn't any record of Catherine being very close to them. The Dowager Duchess of Richmond, that's Mary Howard, Anne Herbert, Elizabeth Tyrwhitt, and Lady Jane Dudley, whose husband Sir John served as Catherine's master of the horse. Lady Jane Dudley, I'm pretty sure, is the mother of Guildford Dudley, who married Lady Jane Grey and then became king, kind of, for 9 days. But there also isn't anything to suggest that Catherine, like, didn't like them. And she seems to have gotten on quite happily with them. So, like, they were okay. Right. So given her new position as the head of the largest female-dominated domestic establishment in England, it seemed to most people that she was lucky to have spent most of her childhood in a female-dominated establishment like the Dowager Duchess of Norfolk. So you'd be like, oh, well, she knows how to do that. That's great. Unfortunately, Catherine's childhood and adolescence at Lambeth were to shape her subsequent career in negative ways.
Yeah.
Her education had made her like very elegant. She had great manners. She was very good at music and dancing, so that helped her succeed in a court with Henry, who was like obsessed with dancing and music. But it also left her very unprepared for a position that required her to like psychologically distance herself from her daily companions. Like, you can't be best friends with your ladies in waiting when you're queen.
Oh.
It's really? Just not how it works. Well, you can be best friends, but you can't tell them everything. That's kind of the problem with, like, Anne Boleyn and Jane Seymour going from the lady who has been with these other people for a long time, and then all of a sudden she's in charge. That's hard to do. But you're not really supposed to still be, like, really close with them. Yeah. But basically, she had a taste for gossip and backstairs intrigue, which she never had a chance to grow out of. And that was grown from Lambeth. So thanks, Lambeth. Separate to this, and with another way to potentially harm her, were the attitudes within the court towards the Queen's household. Both Catherine of Aragon and Anne Boleyn had been criticized for how secretive their households were, and the dangers of the female bonds established within them. Catherine was criticized for her reliance on one of her confessors that people didn't really like, and Anne was criticized for being too close to certain ladies in waiting. Which I think is kind of dumb. She was literally one of them. Those are her friends. But this invited suspicion and resentment from the male, you know, all those males, and even the household's own members. So Queen Catherine, who was much younger than any of Henry's previous queens and had the least experience of life at his court, except for Anne of Cleves, had inherited a household that was newly formed. So it's like new. And it knew a lot of secrets and was always suspected of knowing more. It doesn't sound great for someone who's obsessed with gossip.
No.
Sounds like that's just going to make a dangerous environment for her that she's going to get trapped in. Yeah. In the final decade of his life, the most important thing that Henry wanted in his wives was an obedience that was just as total as what he expected from his subjects. So, in this regard, Catherine Howard was perfectly suited to the position that she acquired in 1540. If her only role was to greet dignitaries and then shine really bright like a pretty doll at the king's side, she was at least on the surface the perfect candidate. She was great for it. Unfortunately, there's more things to a queen than just doing that, and she didn't always do some things that she was supposed to do because she was 17.
Like she didn't get a chance to like grow up. Like
no, she didn't.
Do things like that's it's teenage behavior, and she didn't get a chance to grow out of it.
Yeah. See, the thing is, like when you look at, I think it's always interesting to con Howard at like the same sort of age. Right now in Mary's life, her dad has just dumped her mom very publicly and has married a brand new lady and has just gotten a brand new daughter that she is now servant to. So she's been forced to grow up very, right. very quickly, and then resents people that kind of are young. And Catherine Howard never really got the chance to grow up, like forced her to do it. So she was just being a teenager. And I think that's partially why Mary kind of hated her. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, so that's great. Also, Mary was solemn since she was like a kid because she's a freaking princess. They were like, no, you can't do that. You have to be queen one day. Yeah, but for the first few months of her marriage, Catherine didn't really do a lot of actual like queen consort stuff. After she was at Hampton Court for her official proclamation, she stayed away from London for the rest of summer and all of the autumn. Don't really know why. I think they usually stayed away from London for the summer because it was hot and there was, you know, things like the sweat and other places that they didn't get. That's why the kids never really went to London for that long because they were like, oh, it's a bit yucky here. Edward, you literally are not even allowed to do anything in case you get sick. So maybe you shouldn't live in London. With Henry, Catherine moved from home, she just kind of went all around. She went to Reading, Grafton, Ampthill, Dunstable, and St. Albans. And then she and the king returned to Windsor Castle on 20th October. As she hunted with Henry, he gave her a lot of presents. Henry gives Catherine way too many presents. I don't know what she's supposed to do with all these presents, but she loves them. He gives her 3 golden belts for her wardrobe. Yeah. A brooch with scenes from the life of Noah, I'm assuming from the Bible, crafted from 30 diamonds and 15 rubies. What? Serious politics were abandoned at dinners as a preferred topic of conversation. After the stress of the previous year, the royal household just kind of
partied. They're like, we got a new queen. She's young. She's hot. She's so cool. We're all just going to party. Henry's actually happy for once. This is great. It could not go wrong. Some of the courtiers seem to have been carried away by the atmosphere, including everybody's least favorite man in all of Tudor England, Sir Thomas Seymour.
Yay.
He was expected to receive a heavy fine for brawling within the confines of the court, which was strictly forbidden. So yeah, he fought with someone. He was probably drunk. On the 18th of September, Catherine's brother-in-law, Sir Edward Baynton, was given orders to make sure that members of both the king's and queen's households remembered to behave in sober and temperate order when they were in the royal apartments. So it kind of seems like they're all just having like a frat party, but it's going on for a really long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's just bringing life back to the court, but still people don't really love her. But we'll talk about that later. Catherine isn't really a political queen. She's 17. I don't know what these people want her to do, but she's not a political queen. Let's also remember that, like, she probably wasn't aware of anything really going on in the world when she was like 12 years old at Lambeth. She knew that her cousin had gotten executed, but nah, that's about it. Unlike Anne Boleyn, or later queen consorts like Catherine Parr, Henrietta Maria of France, or Caroline of Ansbach, Catherine didn't really have a clear political or religious agenda. It's like, I'm just coming out here to have a great time. Any books dedicated to her during her time as queen don't have any overt political or religious tones and seem to kind of have been dedicated to her just because she was queen rather than she was like, hey, I really like that book. That looks cool. So yeah. I would still like to have books dedicated to me, so good job, Catherine. At some point, very, very early on, Henry learned, Henry was great fun. He was not above reminding his wives, as he once had Jane Seymour, to keep out of affairs of state. Catherine learns this lesson quickly. As a result, her focus narrowed, and she seems to have taken, like, a really great delight in helping her servants. She likes to get them things because she can, because she has the power to. There's a surviving letter to Catherine from Edward Lee, the Archbishop of York, that's a response that's like, I'm really sorry that you did ask me to accept one of your chaplains as an archdeacon, but sorry, we can't do that. She technically has the right to nominate someone for this, but it seems that in her zeal to kind of help her chaplain, she might have overreached her boundaries. But yeah, she was just trying to help him out. Good job, Catherine. She seems like she'd be a really fun friend. Unless you pissed her off, and then she'd be really mean to you. she had personality traits that were nurtured by lifelong popularity among kind of everybody that she was with. This included a bossiness that was usually nice, but became very tart when she was defied. Years earlier, she was very quick to rebuke Henry Mannix for embarrassing her in his conversations with Mary Lascelles. Then she just, it's time for her to fight with Mary.
Yay.
If an argument persists and Catherine doesn't get an apology, then she's not always the nicest. That autumn, she gets a series of slights from her eldest stepdaughter, Mary. Mary didn't like her new stepmother. Wonder why. She is, it is 1540. She was born in 1516. She's like 24 years old. If my dad married someone who was 7 years younger than me, and I was a 24-year-old. He's like, here's my new 17-year-old bride. I would be mad, too.
Yeah.
She also really liked Anne of Cleves. So she's not happy. She's like, this is who you choose, Dad? Really? But she also knows that she doesn't have any choice. I think there might have also been a little bit of a, how in the hell is this kid married and I am not yet? Jealousy. What is up with that? Yeah. Jealousy. Olivia Rodrigo. Mary isn't blessed with the gifts of subtlety any Catherine was when they were insulted. So we've just got two people on opposite sides who are both equally volatile and both equally stubborn. This sounds like it's going to work out great.
So great.
Catherine knows that this isn't how Mary treated Anne of Cleves. She was there. And someone who had been at court could have told her that Mary had also been much more respectful towards Jane Seymour. Mary was clever, but she wasn't always wise, and she badly underestimated the new queen's temper. Mary. In a letter from the 5th of December, the emperor's ambassador to London informed Mary's cousin, Maria of Austria, that the princess, having heard from me that the attempt lately made to take away from her two of her maidservants proceeded entirely from this new queen, who was rather offended at her not treating her with the same respect as the two preceding ones, has found some means of conciliation with her, so she thinks that for the present, at least, her two maids will not be dismissed from her service. So, basically, Catherine and Mary have fought, somehow. Catherine's mad that Mary isn't treating her as nicely as she did the last two. And so she has the power because Henry's not going to say no to her about anything. And Henry also is perfectly fine with being mad at his eldest daughter. And so she's like, you know what? Screw you, Mary. I'm going to take away two of your maids. I don't know how many maids Mary had, but I don't think she had a ton at the time. So yeah, basically this is like petty infighting, but yeah. There's a subsequent letter that's written 2 months later from the ambassador indicates that the reconciliation between Catherine and Mary had only lasted a few weeks at the most. And when it broke down, Catherine made good at her threat. She was like, no, bye. Say goodbye to your maids. Damn. Catherine. Catherine. Yeah. Catherine, God. But also, I'm sure Mary said something.
Yeah.
I'm sure she said something. But, you know, those scenes in the Tudors are some of the best ones in season 4. The acting on both parts is just chef's kiss, so can't wait for you to see that in, 4 months.
Or one more double vaxxed, maybe.
Yeah. Well, we are technically allowed to see each other right now. It's just kind of busy at the moment. and it was also raining all weekend. So, that wasn't fun. And guess what, guys? Guess he's coming back into this story. We all thought he was gone. It's Francis Dereham.
Oh, my God.
He's back.
He's back.
Even though he left the Dowager Duchess's service without her permission, he came back from, I think he was in Ireland. I honestly don't care. He was not in England. And he came back and he's like, hey, Dowager Duchess, it's me, your fave. He came back to Norfolk House. At some point in 1450, the Dowager made discreet legal inquiries about the possible ramifications of a pre-contract like Francis and Catherine's. And she also seems to have asked Francis for any written proof he had about his relationship with Catherine, including ballads she knew he had written about her. So he wrote songs about her. They're probably bad.
Probably.
If this request was made, then Francis didn't fully comply. Francis. We can't know for certain if the Dowager had encouraged Francis to leave London until Catherine was safely married. She was like, Francis, just get out of here. Or if her story that he left without her knowledge is true. On the balance of probability, the latter seems more likely, especially because now the Howards are like, what on earth are we supposed to do with him? Because he wants a job in Catherine's service. He's like, no, I'd like to go be like her horse boy or something. Stable boy. if she refused him, it's dangerous because he'd probably make a big fit. And if she accepted him, it's dangerous because he could let something slip to someone and the gossip would spread like wildfire. So that sounds great. The Dowager Duchess went to the Queen to discuss it. She's like, oh, what are we going to do? So they kind of figure out that Catherine should grant an audience to Francis and then maybe show him some sign of her favor. That's as far as they're willing to go. There's nothing to suggest that anybody else in the family even knew about the agreement with Dereham outside of four people and Catherine. She didn't have any affection left for him, and he had caused her nothing but anxiety from the moment he re-entered her life. Lot, Francis. Get out. I hate him. He wasn't appointed to her household staff in any capacity in November 1540. And so he can't be given an official post because he's too young. He's unknown at court. Like, no one has any idea who he is. And he's unqualified to serve as an officer of the Queen's household. Even if he had once, you know, written some stuff down for the Dowager Duchess of Norfolk. They must have known that, you know, Francis wouldn't be okay with this indefinitely. But he's so annoying. He hasn't lost any of his flair for a public scene. He hasn't lost his aggressive temper. And the proximity to the girl he wanted to marry was not very big. So that eventually proved too difficult for him. He's mad. And now it's January 4th. And here's the moment that all of the Six fans used to prove that Catherine and Anne of Cleves were literally besties. I'm sorry. Okay. Anyways, it's January 4th. Catherine is about to host Anne of Cleves in a whole charade that was designed simply to broadcast Henry's insistence that his most recent divorce was legal, it was amicable, and it was unavoidable. By official mutual consent, Anne was a member of the English royal family, and so therefore she got all the legal rights of a king's sister. So they're like, hey, Anne, do you want to come to Christmas? And she was probably like, no.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Yeah. Yeah. So she's escorted to the palace gates by Catherine's uncle, William. I guess he just was like, all right. The Duchess of Suffolk greeted her inside, and then she accompanied her to her apartments. Once Anne had viewed her rooms and her servants came in and started unpacking her things, the Duchess of Suffolk and the Countess of Hertford escorted her to the doors of Catherine's rooms. There they were asked to wait. This delay isn't part of the schedule that's been set. Inside, Catherine is having a panic attack. Same, bestie. Yeah, so obviously her nerves are very understandable. There's obviously like a real struggle to find a precedent that serves as a model for greeting Anne. This isn't the same as greeting a dowager queen because Anne wasn't Henry's widow and she wasn't a former queen because the king insisted that Anne was never his wife. And in public, she agreed. This legal conundrum thing has only happened 2 times in English history before. So they're like, how are we supposed to treat a queen who was never a queen? The two women that were, you know, the previous people who had this exact position were Elizabeth Woodville after her son was deposed in 1483 and Catherine of Aragon after her annulment in 1533. Literally both of them were like, no, that's not true. That's not legal. And so they didn't come to court. So that doesn't help them because they have no idea how they're supposed to treat Anne because Elizabeth and Catherine were like, no, screw you. Even with the obvious like fallback of being like, well, she's the king's sister legally, so why don't we just treat her like one of Henry's sisters? One of them is now dead and the other one lives in Scotland. This is made difficult by the fact that for decades the procedure for greeting the queen, like Mary and Margaret, was based on the rank that they acquired when they married their husbands. Anne doesn't have a husband. It's just her. Like, oh my god, what the heck are we supposed to do? Yeah. I think I would be crying. She probably was. How Anne was received would reflect on Catherine personally. It would also convey to the guests, many of whom were representatives of foreign governments, the security of the king's most recent divorce. So his vanity and his reputation were at risk. So this is a lot on Catherine's shoulders.
Yeah.
Why couldn't Henry have met her first? I mean, that's probably not how it's done. But eventually the queen and her advisors were like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to bend the rules in favor of just being kind. We are going to be so nice. Catherine could smooth over any potential awkwardness by displays of just like massive admiration for her guest. When the doors were at last opened and Anne was announced, it was apparent that she too had decided that she was just going to be really nice. She sank in the deepest curtsy possible and spoke to Catherine from her spot on the floor, from which she refused to budge despite the queen's pleas for her to stand. So she's like curtsying, Catherine's like, get up. And she's like, no, I'm just going to curtsy. Okay. Then they had supper. Yeah. After supper, the king, the queen, and Anne of Cleves talked. It seemed like they were having a great time. Someone said that they talked in the most gracious manner. And then the king was like, I'm tired. So he left. Henry, you don't leave your two exes alone together. Just doesn't sound smart. But because they're both chill, they danced a duet together before the revelers were invited to join them. For the second dance, they each chose a young man from the king's privy chamber staff as a partner. So yeah, they danced well into the night and they had a great time. This is what all the six people are like. They were best friends. Like, no, they were trying to keep Henry's reputation alive, and also Anne was trying not to be embarrassed in front of the entire world.
Right.
Like, yeah, most people think that Anne probably felt bad for Catherine. I also would feel bad for Catherine. I feel bad for her right now, and I never even knew her. On the second day of Anne's visit, she had dinner with the king and queen again, and then Henry left again, and then Catherine and Anne danced together again. And then they were interrupted, and a messenger came to Catherine to give her two new dogs, and a ring, gifts from Henry, who's just like, here, honey, you want some dogs? Why did he do that? Like, that one single time, like, could he not have done it, like, when he was with her? but apparently, Catherine was just as impressed as anybody with how Anne handled herself, and so, you know, she might have also been genuinely sympathetic to her situation, because she immediately was like, no, Anne, these dogs are for you, and have this ring, too. So, yeah, Anne got some new dogs.
Yay.
Puppies. She probably liked puppies. I feel like she's a puppy person. Hopefully it doesn't end up like Purkoi. Purkois. It's actually Purkois, but, like, I don't care. thinking about that poor puppy makes me want to cry.
So sad.
Well, and the Protestant little gang there that was led by the Duchess of Suffolk had a dog later that they named Gardiner after the Bishop of Gardiner, so that they could call Gardiner a dog and not get in trouble for it.
Oh, that's fun.
And Anne Boleyn named her dog like after Urien or something, but that's also like one of the devil's names. I don't think she thought that through. But yeah, so the whole visit is like a big success. It's great. Catherine had managed to avoid any show of tasteless triumph, which, you know, is pretty big for a 17-year-old because a lot of 17-year-olds are just very into that. And her performance had impressed people that had been at court for their entire lives. The next few months saw Catherine in a mood of increasing confidence. And good job, Catherine. Except for the fact that it probably was around this time that she decided to reprimand Mary by making good on her threat to dismiss her maids. She's like, I'm just feeling really great. Unfortunately, Henry now gets sick. This is not good for Catherine. It's also not really good for the country, because if he dies, it's like 1541. Edward is like 4 years old. I don't want a baby king. To quote Queen's podcast, babies shouldn't have jobs.
Yeah.
It's not good for them. So yeah, he's getting sick. Henry goes to his bed with a fever. The French ambassador, this is what he said. He's like, this fever should have rather have, for he is very stout. So he's like, this is great. He's going to sweat out all the weight. Marillac, what the heck? He felt better by the 23rd of February. And the council sent a letter to the Duke of Norfolk being like, no, Henry's good now. He's recovered. They were wrong.
Oh.
Henry was in so much pain for a few days that his entourage was actually, like, genuinely afraid that he was going to die. That's not great for England. The Privy Council and the Privy Chamber worked together to stifle news of, you know, the fact that Henry was sick. There were discussions about rebuilding the southern defenses and the fortifications at Calais, and just, you know, they kept going just like nothing was wrong. But the ambassadors and the courtiers knew that something was up. They were like, okay. Either because he was embarrassed at his physical condition or he was in too low spirits to take comfort from her company, Henry ordered that Catherine wasn't allowed to visit him. And she was left rattled by his decision. She was like, why didn't he want to see me? I'm his wife. He didn't want to see her. Aww. Sad. I think that he didn't want to see her because he really tried to make himself seem younger with Catherine. And I think he thought he would have not looked cool anymore if he was sick. And also his leg looks gross. So there's that too. Catherine is isolated, and for the first time, she feels the fear of uncertainty that so many of her husband's companions had endured for years. Jamarillac wrote in a letter to the French king that Henry spent Shrovetide without recreation, even of music, in which he used to take as much pleasure as any prince in Christendom, and stayed in Hampton Court with so little company that his court resembled more a private family than a king's train. So he's not feeling great. I don't like it when anybody's sick. But Catherine's life probably would have been better if he died.
Yeah, honestly.
Probably would have ended much later. She would have been, like, dowager queen and had a great time. Although, let's be honest, if Edward died when he did, then Mary became queen, might not have been as great for Catherine.
No.
I don't think Mary would have hurt her. I think she would have just, like, stopped paying her allowance or something. Like, no, Catherine, you're fine. Unfortunately, Catherine was, like, really happy after Anne of Cleves' visit, but now her behavior alters significantly. She becomes more prone to insecurity, but also begins to behave more recklessly in the privacy of her own apartments. She veered between uncertainty and a dangerous overconfidence. And it was possibly during her husband's brush with death that she realized that for the first time that his love for her was no more consistent than his love for his country or any of his other wives. The first 6 months of Catherine's queenship was kind of like not really queenship. She was only very briefly at one of the larger palaces at the start of August. And then after that, she's kind of like moved around from hunting lodge to hunting lodge. And so she was not aware of the political reality of her new position. This is, to quote Gareth Russell again, that her marriage had pitched her headfirst into a fraught and internecine environment where everyone had long, if silenced, memories of those who had already been destroyed by her husband. End quote.
Wow.
Sorry, besties. She's just not having a good time. Her behavior during Anne of Cleves' visit to Hampton Court shows how much Catherine wants to do things right. And that visit and her quarrels with Mary confirm in different ways just how disagreeable she found criticism. She doesn't like it. Her husband's dark mood must have unsettled her. So great for her. It's now March 19th. I feel like that's a day, but it's actually not. It's just that Anne Boleyn died on May 19th, and those kind of sound the same. So the royal household leaves Westminster for Greenwich, and it's 2 years to the day since Catherine's father had died in debt. Okay. From the palace, Catherine walked down the steps to the royal barge, and this was her first time coming to London since the king married her. So she got a great reception. Everyone was like, yay, she's here. Catherine and her husband might have continued sleeping together during Lent, even though you're not supposed to. And if not, they most certainly had in the build-up to it. When Henry returned to Greenwich on April 5th, after 16 days in the south, Catherine informed him that she was pregnant. Ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum.
Yay.
Well, Whitsuntide. So basically, as soon as she's like, Henry, I'm pregnant, he's like, let's get her crowned. Let's go. Come on, friends. It's his thing, you know? You got to have that baby first. Whitsuntide, the suggested date for the coronation, was the seventh Sunday after Easter, which gave enough time for, like, everything to get ready, but also they could crown Catherine when she would presumably be beginning to show, but it was long enough before it would be unwise for her to exert herself with the coronation. Now, I'm not an expert, but I feel like, I don't even know, I feel like being 5 months pregnant was not fun for Anne, so maybe we shouldn't force Catherine to do the same thing. A baby is going to guarantee Catherine's future. If she had a son, it would be Duke of York, and he would guarantee her position as a great lady. And if, for whatever reason, Prince Edward died, then Catherine could potentially be Queen Mother and Regent, maybe. So that sounds great for her.
Do you think if she had, like, a boy, she would have not been killed?
No, probably not.
She wouldn't have been killed?
No.
Damn.
I mean, I know Anne got killed and she had a kid, but
that was just a girl.
It's just Elizabeth. Who cares about her? everybody, Henry. But yeah. So it's Maundy Thursday. Catherine is handing out gifts because that's what she does. Accompanied only by her chamberer, Catherine Tilney, and Lady Rochford. Oh, Jane. Catherine met her old beau, Thomas Culpepper, in the small corridor that linked the Queen's public and private rooms. Catherine, what is you doing? Estee. Thomas and Catherine's earlier romance was apparently so inconsequential that Henry had never even heard about it. He had no idea what was going on. But evidently, she was still fascinated. Lady Rochford had arranged the meeting on the Queen's behalf, and then they got Culpepper from the presence chamber. Culpepper already had two caps that Henry had given him, but Catherine gave him a cap in an entirely different spirit. Then she was like, hide the cap under your cloak until you're back in your rooms. And he embarrassed her. He retorted something, I don't have it written down, but it was something like, oh, now you want to pay attention to me? So this embarrassed her, and Catherine did not summon him back to her rooms for quite some time after his underwhelming reaction to the cap. Her response to his teasing and her own suggestion that he hid the cap indicate that she had hoped for and expected praise, and that she hadn't given him the hat with only platonic intentions. By Easter, members of Catherine's household were noticing her preference for hanging out with Jane Boleyn, the lady who had helped arrange the private meeting with Thomas Culpepper. Jane, what is you doing? Bestie. Oh my god. Her ascendancy in Queen Catherine's affections made the household kind of curious. They're like, what the heck is happening? And then after several months, they were all really pissed about it. She wasn't an obvious candidate for the Queen's favor, because by 1541, she was about 36 years old enough to be her mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reasons for this friendship are therefore difficult to, you know, figure out, but given what happened next, it seems as if a shared love of scandal and intrigue brought them together. Jane... Oh my god, we will be talking about her. I don't know if I want to do a mini-sode on her, if I want to just talk about her for like two episodes, but god, that this lady just has like a terrible reputation, and I don't know. Sometimes I think she deserves it, and sometimes I don't think she does.
Yeah.
Yay. But it's, ugh, god, by this point, preparations for Catherine's coronation have stopped, along with any talk of her having a child. What precisely actually happened with Catherine's pregnancy is unclear. There's a lot of different explanations that are all equally possible. The first is that the pregnancy had ended in miscarriage at a very early stage. A second possibility is that Catherine had invented the story in order to, you know, restore herself to Henry's favor. Because after he was sick, their relationship had kind of gone through a not as great point. A third possibility is that Catherine or the people around her had made a genuine mistake in diagnosing her condition. Like, maybe her period didn't come for a different reason.
Yeah.
It's 1541. They don't have great medical care. They can't pee on a stick and figure it out. So now children are on her mind. It's May 1541. And some of our, some pretty chill people are about to come into our story. Some little tiny people. In the same week as, I don't even know. Catherine visits her stepchildren. Yay! Until that point, she had only interacted with Mary, who's 25 by this point, and she wants to meet the other two. The visit to her stepson was discussed in one of Chapuis's letters to the governor of the Netherlands, but he did not mention, and maybe didn't know, that on the 6th of May, took her to Chelsea, where she received the Princess Elizabeth. she's not a princess right now, but we're calling her that because there's other Lady Elizabeths and it's confusing. The night before, Catherine stayed at Baynard's Castle, which was her official residence in London, and the king visited his household of Edward in Essex. So he goes to see Edward. It's interesting that Catherine met Elizabeth without Henry before she met Edward. She's like, I want to meet her first. Again, to quote Gareth Russell, the 7-year-old Elizabeth was the youngest, least loved, and most ignored of Henry's children. But she's the least loved and most ignored, so that's great for her.
Middle child problems.
Middle child problems, your mom falsely committed adultery problems, your dad hates your mom problems.
Yeah.
I mean, her dad hates Catherine of Aragon, too, but Catherine of Aragon did betray him in the same way Anne Boleyn did. So, yeah. Also, I mean, he died when Elizabeth was 13. Who knows what he would have done if she had lived to the same age that Mary was when Mary got to be at court all the time. She probably would have been at court all the time. He might just have ignored her a lot.
Yeah.
Great job. Catherine's own familial bond to Elizabeth might have explained why she went out of her way to meet her at Chelsea. The trip from Baynard's was unusual in itself. Even though it was her official residence, the castle was barely ever used for overnight stays by Tudor queens consort. But it was clearly used as a base for Catherine to talk to Elizabeth, who moved to Chelsea literally the day before Catherine came. So, I don't know. On her mother's side, Elizabeth was Catherine's second cousin because Elizabeth's maternal grandmother was Edmund Howard's younger sister and Anne Boleyn's mom. So, yay. In relative terms, the necklaces that Catherine gave to Elizabeth as a gift were remarkably expensive, and they paled in comparison to the rubies that Mary got from their dad at Christmas, but it was more than Catherine had ever given to Mary personally or willingly. So she gave Elizabeth some necklaces. God. It was probably the best, like, I don't even know, it's probably the most attention Elizabeth had gotten in a while. From people other than Kat. We love Kat. You know, Catherine Champernowne. You go, girl. Yeah. No, in the Elizabeth Royal Diaries, she talked about Catherine Howard all the time, and it used to make me cry when I was, like, 7. Like, oh my god. No, because it was, like, I don't even know when it was. I think it was set in, like, 1543 or something. So, like, Catherine Howard, like, just died. And so she's, like, sometimes I hear her screaming running around the halls, and I'm like, what? Okay, then. But, yeah, Catherine stays 4 days with Elizabeth. Okay. And then she goes back to Henry, and she accompanies him to Essex, where Edward is staying with Mary and their respective households. I don't know why Elizabeth isn't staying with them. Why isn't Mary with her, too? But Edward's 3. He's 3 years old. Go, Edward. Aw. I love little kids. Jordan gave me a fist bump today and a high five.
That's really sweet.
And she calls it French fries when you fist bump and then you, like, bring it back and wiggle your fingers.
That's really cute.
Her hands are so little. Anyways. The visit into Essex to see Edward was judged a success. It ended with the king inviting Mary back to court, and Catherine was like, fine. Outwardly, she was nice. Mary had been pressing for her father to visit Edward more often. She's like, you never see him. She's over 20 years older than her brother, and so she's like, Edward is my best friend. Yeah. However, Chapuis was quite clear in his letter to the emperor that the deciding factor was Catherine's enthusiasm for the trip. He told Charles V that Catherine Henry went to see the prince at the request of the princess, but chiefly at the intercession of the queen herself. So this implies that Catherine was eager to meet with all 3 of Henry's children. And, her different attitudes towards Mary and Elizabeth leave little doubt about which one she liked better. Just leave that one there. But the good grace that she displayed when Mary came back to London is another example of her tendency towards kindness once she had calmed down about an earlier slight. Good job, bestie. Perhaps what's most telling about the visit with Elizabeth at Chelsea and then with Edward and Mary 4 days later was when it took place. She didn't rush into the role of loving stepmother. From the evidence that we have, she only met Elizabeth and Edward 10 months after she married their dad. Oh. And the only reason she knew Mary was that she was the only one that was old enough to live at court. I mean, Elizabeth is 10 years younger than her. Maybe, you know, 11. We don't know when she was born. And Edward is, like, 3. But Edward is, like, young enough to be her kid.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Going to see Edward didn't really have any risks. It's Edward. Henry would be like, oh my gosh, you want to go see my son? Yes, go. But going to meet Elizabeth, you know, might not have been as happy about. So it does seem to have required some organization and some genuine interest on Catherine's part. I like, if Henry had been mad at her about going to see Elizabeth, I can just, like, no. I really hope he didn't think a lot about the fact that Catherine and Anne were related. Because,
yeah.
But I also feel like the fact that Catherine was beheaded for adultery and Anne was beheaded for adultery might have affected how he thought of Elizabeth after Catherine's death.
Honestly, yeah.
Those are two of her relatives. Those are two Howard women. Great job, guys. Not to them, just Henry. You suck. So much of Henry, just like Catherine is now getting happier. She is growing in confidence and she has more self-esteem. So that's great. Catherine had always liked to organize people. She now feels, we think, she rendezvoused with Thomas Culpepper. She interceded for two people that were going to be killed probably and was like, no, Henry, don't do it. She met with Elizabeth and then she went and met with Edward. These are all the actions of someone who feels that she can now get away with more and started to behave accordingly. Maybe she shouldn't have done this, but okay. I'm glad that she's happy. Alongside the confidence, there's also a jitteriness to Catherine that occasionally expressed itself. A week after they visited Edward, Henry noticed that Catherine seemed upset. And he was like, why are you upset? I imagine it was like, why are you upset, babe? He was probably really gross. and when he asked her why, she said that it was because of a rumor that he was going to take back Anne of Cleves. The story wasn't new. It had circulated in London in September. But this time Catherine reacted to it. And sometimes she even found it credible when she wasn't feeling great about herself. Can I just say that Anne of Cleves did not want to go back to him, I don't think.
Yeah.
So I don't think Catherine has to stress. There are other problems, though, that are facing her in 1541 that come from the wonderful realm of public opinion, where she was intermittently accused of low morals and wild spending. Talk in London had already referred to her as a harlot and a woman of poor character. Yeah. This is just what happens to royal women. They are always either patriotic and beautiful and amazing and so pure, or their horse.
Right.
That's like a Catherine wearing on Anne Boleyn, two sides of the coin right there. They just...
Yeah.
Catherine's high spirits and happiness also encouraged criticism. People were like, all she ever does is dance and rejoice. Oh my god. What? A defense of Catherine's spending, however, is like, when you set it in context, it's not that massive. Her jewelry acquisitions in the summer of winter in 1540 compare much more favorably in cost to those commissioned by or for Anne Boleyn even before she became queen. Anne spent a lot of money on jewelry and clothes. Dear God, she just... Elizabeth really did not stand a chance to have good spending habits. Let's look at both of her parents.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god. People are like, oh, she spends so much money on clothes. I'm like, yeah, she did. But look at her mom and then look at her dad.
Love that.
Love that for her. However, Catherine's extravagance wasn't balanced by any, like, piety or, like, helping the poor really that much as Anne had kind of done. And also, you know, some of her other predecessors, like Jane Seymour.
Yeah.
So... yeah. It's interesting that after a period where she felt very insecure, Catherine threw herself into the role of a model queen consort, and she found herself to be very good at it. At the same time, she began to pine for some of the excitement she had felt before, like Thomas Culpepper. If you tried to summarize Catherine's life from this point on, it would be that she excelled in public, but made more and more mistakes in private. And that is where we will be leaving you.
Okay.
She's feeling great right now. But, she feels
amazing.
I'm not feeling so great. Personally, I just don't think she's just not going to end well, sweetheart. What are you doing? But yeah. It is just, the story is over at this point. I don't know if we'll have a mini cast next week. I think we probably will be able to because I don't have English anymore. Well, I do, but.
Oh my God, we're like done school.
Only on Monday. I know. I was leaving the meet because on Friday in American history, we just had a test, right? And then we were done. So, like, we didn't say goodbye. We just left the meet because we have to go on the meet to do our test because people cheat. So, like, you have to see your face. And, yeah, like, I was done and I just left. I wasn't like, bye, Miss Matchett. She wasn't like, bye, everybody. Have a good summer. It's just like, okay, click the red hang-up button.
Yeah, like, we didn't have a goodbye at all.
It was really sad. Like, I just kind of felt, I was like, oh. But it doesn't even feel like it ever, like, because we weren't in class, I feel like I never really felt like the quad actually started, so I feel like it should just keep going.
Same, yeah.
So, that's great. I'm not sad about English ending, but
yeah,
I did like American history. I'm sad we didn't get to go past the Great Depression, because, you know, other things did happen after the 1930s, but we didn't have enough time, so that's great. How far did you get in Canadian?
Well, we did everything we could. I don't know. Give me like a
you get to like 1990?
I think so.
Did you learn about Quebec trying to leave in 1995?
No.
That's like the farthest we got. Henry didn't even learn about the Constitution, so. That's like a very important part of Grade 10 Canadian history. Anyways, folks, thank you for listening. You can find us on social media. Our Instagram is NotSlutyMary_podcast. I don't really use it because people I know follow me on there, and so I don't like posting much. It's only people that I like, but like still, it still scares me. Our TikTok is NotSlutyMary_podcast as well. When I turned on my phone this morning, we had over 100 notifications on there, and it kind of scared me a lot. So if you're here from TikTok, thank you. The person that was talking to me on TikTok about how they might come check out the podcast, if you're here. Hi. It was from the video about only hot people had this phase in their childhood. So, yeah, thanks for coming. And you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because I know that like 35% of you listen on Apple Podcasts. So you obviously have some sort of Apple device that you can review us on. You can leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/NotSlutyMary. I think that's the URL, but anyway, just go on anchor.fm and search us up. Our URL used to be something else, but I changed it because I figured out how. Yeah, you can follow Grace on TikTok at @thelovely_bookworm if you want. If you like Caleb Pryor, though, it's not a safe space for you. So
no, you will get personally harassed.
Personally harassed. Grace will hurt you online.
Yeah. I will.
No one take that out of context.
Yeah, it's fine. We're jokes.
Jokes. Funny. Have a great summer, peoples. We will see you next week, though. We're not going on summer vacation because, unlike some people, we are actually more free in summer.
Yeah.
So we don't have school. So, like, going on summer vacation is kind of dumb for us to do because we're on summer vacation.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, Grace might be working at the old ski place that I used to competitive ski race at. So
possibly. That's great. Everyone wish me luck.
Everyone manifest and wish and
pray and whatever do your you things.
Do whatever you do it.
Whatever you do it. Yeah, I have work training tomorrow, so hopefully that goes great and I don't fall in the water and die. I won't, guys. I'm pretty sure like half the people there are lifeguards, so I'll be okay. Yeah. Have a great time. Grace, what should they do?
Today, you should go to someone. Go to, like, if you're out somewhere, like, if you're going out, even if, like, just be safe with COVID. I'm not telling you to go out, but if you are out.
Go to a carnival.
Say hi to a stranger. Just be like, hi.
You should say that they look pretty or that they have, that you like their clothes.
Yeah, just be nice. And if you're not going out,
I like doing that.
Someone in your house or, like, someone around you.
Like, I like doing that. I tell my mom that I like her clothes, like, every day. And she's always like, you always say that. And I'm like, well, yeah. I like them.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So do that.
Yeah. And also, you should be nice to your parents unless they're mean. Don't be nice to them if they're mean to you. but, like, appreciate them unless they suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I don't know, guys. Next episode with Catherine is not going to be as fun as this one. And this one wasn't even that fun. Basically, whenever you read anything, when you read stuff with Anne Boleyn, it's like those last like 2 months, you just feel everything getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And it's just like crumbling down around you. But you can like feel it. With Catherine Howard, you're just like, oh, no, baby, don't do that. No, stop. Don't do that. No, stop. Catherine, what are you doing? It's like the same vibe, but in a different way. So it's going to be great fun, you guys. I don't think I'll cry this time. I did cry with Anne, but
yeah,
I don't know. But anyways, peace out, home slices. We love you all very, very much. Here's a consensual kiss on your forehead. You can accept it or you can decline. There you go. Yeah. Peace out.
Have fun.
Bye.
Bye.